this gives us more time to talk about this Leonard Skinner plane crash with Gene Odom. Best friends with Ronnie Van Zant, and he was on the plane. Chaz and AJ in the morning, 99.1 PLR, 95.9 The Fox. So, Gene, take us through that day or the days leading up to that. Did you guys know that the plane was a mess?
Kind of, yeah.
Okay, so before, so in Artemis's movie, and the only reason I bring this up is because it's the only version of it that we've seen or heard. And it showed that Aerosmith turned the plane down because it had a bad reputation. The pilots didn't have a great reputation. And then there was an occurrence when Leonard Skinner first flew on the plane, and then they asked for the plane to be fixed. Did all of that happen?
The road manager had actually talked the airplane people into getting that piece of junk because he could get a kickback for keeping the band on it. We didn't know that at the time, but I found that out later.
Oh,
and, I was putting a stop to all that. But anyway, Aerosmith's road manager looked at it and, what the deal was the road manager was going to try to rent the plane out when the Leonard Skinner band wasn't using it. And he showed it to the road manager, and they didn't have no intention of renting the plane, so they turned down his offer.
All right, so the plane was questionable.
No, not really questionable at the time, because we didn't know that they had an engine problem, which they didn't know what kind of engine problem they had. That's why I begged them to fix the plane in Greenville, South Carolina, but they just ignored my plea. It was an old plane, but, running out of gas is a horrible mistake to do. And after all the years of me checking with pilots and maintenance people and everything, I think I determined why they ran out of gas and why they came to that dreadful ending.
So they did run out of gas. So two of the points from Artemis's movie, the plane had issues.
Yeah.
Wasn't the best plane. And then the plane ran out of gas. So those two things you say did happen.
But now, number one, I haven't seen his movie because when he first started that, I told everybody it would be a psychotic fairy tale about his own story, which would be all nothing but lies, and turned it's come out to be that piece of crap, what I've heard from everybody. The airplane itself was, an older plane, but, it was safety-wise, but what happened was... they had had a problem, some kind of mechanical minor problem with the engine that would cause it to miss in flight. And then when we left Lakeland, come to find out from mechanics and auto people and everybody in the business, the big blue flames that came out the engine as we were taking off leaving Lakeland was called torching. They had got the fuel mixture too rich. And it caused the engine to torch when we were lifting off. That scared the hell out of everybody, of course. The big old flames coming out there, and we were taking off and probably at a 50, 40, 50, 60 degree angle. And I pulled my way to the cockpit and told them to turn the damn plane around. Something happened to the engine, the right engine. And, they were fighting to get the plane up. And they said, go sit down, put your seatbelt on. Everything's fine. I said, no, it ain't. I said, that damn engine blowed up. Something happened. Turn this damn plane around. So they said, no, man, go sit down. Everything's fine. Pointed to the gauges. They said, everything's fine, So that was we left Lakeland.
That was your first flight on the plane?
No. We had flew to the first flight on that plane was for that tour. We left a few days earlier for a warm-up show. Warm-up show in Statesboro, Georgia.
Okay, so you were on the plane a couple of times, and then that was Lakeland. The engine had blue flames coming out.
Yeah, and so that was called torching. Anyway, so and we flew to Greenville, South Carolina, and you could hear the right engine miss. a little miss. Anyway, so I went up there again, and they said, everything's done. Don't worry. Everything's fine. So when we landed in Greenville, South Carolina, they put 400 gallons of gas on the plane, their fuel receipts and stuff. And so 400 gallons of fuel, we should have flew that plane from Greenville to Baton Rouge. So my theory at the all these years of checking with everybody, what they didn't know, they estimated the weight and they estimated the flights that we took to Statesboro, to Miami, to Tampa, to Lakeland, to Greenville. They estimated those engines would burn approximately 89 gallons per hour. And what they were doing to compensate for the miss in the engine, which they didn't know what it was, they run the right engine in what's called auto-rich position, meaning that that feeds the engine more fuel than the 89 gallons per hour. Oh. When you run it in auto-rich position, it burns another 29 gallons per hour. And all the years of my investigating and everything, what I've determined is that the auto-rich position that they run the engine in was malfunctioning. It wasn't burning 29 gallons of fuel per hour extra, burning approximately 39 gallons, 10 gallons per hour extra fuel that they didn't know they were burning. So all of the hours that they run the plane in, which nobody alive knows how many hours they ran the plane in that position, those 10 gallons of fuel that they didn't know they were burning, when they thought they had approximately 170 to 200 gallons on the plane when they landed in Greenville, South Carolina.
So, hold on.
Gene, go ahead.
Tell us about the moment that you're on the plane with Leonard Skinner. Are you guys awake? Are you sleeping? When did you know there was the first sign of trouble?
We were probably 10, 12 minutes from landing in Baton Rouge, and the engine started running out of fuel. We were coming out, they got permission to come out of 12,000 feet to 10,000 feet. When we started out of the 12,000 feet, the engine started running out of fuel. And then the propeller would start spinning. And then one of the engines would suck up some fuel, and that would spin the plane sideways away, left to the right, and spin the plane. And then both engines would stop, and the blades would just spin. And so sputtering back and forth,
So everyone was awake on the plane? Ronnie was awake, the whole band?
No. Ronnie had taken – he'd been up the night before, all night long. They were talking about the album and – raising hell about the plane, and they were fighting amongst themselves about the girls didn't want to fly on the plane. A couple more, Dean Kilpatrick, Billy didn't want to fly on the plane. They were having a band meeting, and when that kind of meeting went on, I was asleep. And I wouldn't be no part of that because Ronnie wouldn't want me to get my sleep. So they were in there, and so he'd been up all night. So when we got on the plane and we started going, he said, "Man, I got to get some sleep, Gene. I need to sleep this 2.5 hours. He said, "I took 2 sleeping pills, I got from one of the whatever." And he said, "I got to get some sleep, man." So I said, "All right, well, look here." On the couch where Kevin Elson, Gary, and Alan were sitting, there was actually room for 4 people on that couch. And so I put him in front of the couch. Was a table, a little like a 2x6 table that you could put your drink on or set your feet on or whatever.
Right.
So I said, get down here underneath, you lift y'all's feet up, you know. And they lift their feet up, put their feet on the table. I laid him down on the floor underneath their legs. That way everybody could walk to the galley or whatever, get Cokes or whatever they want to drink.
So Ronnie was sleeping.
Ronnie was zonked out. Passed out, completely passed out, coughing them 2 sleeping pills.
Let me take a break and then we'll come back because this is the moment where the plane starts malfunctioning and the Leonard Skinner plane goes down. Gene Odom, friend of Ronnie Van Zandt, he was on the plane on the show now. Gene, so we're at the moment where the plane is having troubles just outside of where you were going to land. And you got everyone on the plane now knows that there's trouble coming. Do you wake up Ronnie or what happens?
everybody on the plane knew was in trouble except Ronnie because he was so drugged out with them two sleeping pills. No, when I run to the cockpit to argue with the pilots, I kicked him in the side. I said, get up, man. And so I went up there and seen what the deal was going on, and they said, yeah, strap everybody and make everybody wake up. We're going to do a belly landing. We've got to do a belly landing here in the field. And I run back and hollered at everybody, strapped from in, people in. And I think Artemis went to the cockpit one time and came back with a horrible look on his face, scared to death, went back to his seat. And then I kicked Ronnie in the side, get up, man. And I went back to the cockpit and I argued with the pilots and told them, I said, now don't you wish you was on the tarmac like I begged you to be? And so they were fighting the plane because at that time the little John engine had ran out of fuel in the back, so they had no flap control, no hydraulic power, no nothing. And they were, we were just in a gliding, coming down. And I seen the feel that they were trying to make, and I said, you son of a bitches. I said, I'm going to beat both of y'all to death if you live through this. And I run back and kick Ronnie. I said, get up, man. And so then I turned and went back to the cockpit, and I saw we wasn't going to make the field. I said, now, see what you've done. We're not going to make it. And then I went and grabbed Ronnie up off the floor and shoved him between Alan and Gary. And he was so grogged out, he didn't know what hell he was doing. He was mad as hell. He said, what are you doing, man? They said, I got to get some sleep. Don't mess with me, man. Because we used to joke about the plane. I said, I'm not joking, man. The plane's crashing. Put your head down. And I strapped him in his seat belt. He's trying to get up, mad as hell, won't know what. He didn't know how to idea what was going on. He had no idea the plane was crashing. I said, man, the plane's crashing. And I actually slapped him. I said, I'm not joking. I said, and about that time, somebody said, trees. And the wings started hitting the trees. And he was mad, and he's fighting me, trying to get up. And so I'm 100% sure he unsnapped his seat belt. And I turned to run back to my seat, but I was running uphill at about a 52-degree angle because we were coming down good at that point. And so about that time is when we hit the ground. And I was jettisoned with the plane broke apart and fractured where everybody crawled out of it. I went through that on impact up under the right wing, right engine. Nobody knew I was there until after they got everybody out of the plane and Billy Powell was sitting there on, and I crawled out under the wing and Billy said, hey, somebody come help Gene. You know, I didn't know he said that because I was unconscious, but I was had a big, massive hole in my head. And so what I'm trying to say is that when the cockpit crunched into the trees and crashed into the ground, that caused the weight of the plane caused such a massive impact that twisted that section. And when it did, it twisted the middle section where Ronnie and Alan and Gary and Kevin Elson, Steve and Dean were at. It twisted that up to the right a little bit. And that jettisoned Ronnie, since he wasn't strapped into a seat, on top of that table that was in front of their feet there. And he ended up upside down on that table. I know that because I saw his autopsy photograph and I saw his back. That long line on his back was from the corner of the table. He was knocked unconscious and had a bump behind his right ear, fractured femur, and was just knocked unconscious. And with the other people piled on top of him and everything piled on top of him, he died of asphyxiation.
Artemis said he was hit in the head by a TV.
Nah. No, and listen, if what's your name, son?
I'm Chaz.
Chaz, if you're standing in water up to your neck and Thomas Delmer Pyle tells you your feet is wet, don't believe him. The man ain't nothing but a stone cold. It's a liar. Everything he says is a lie. He changes the same story over and over. I'm telling you, nothing he says is true, and there's a reason for that. All the heavy psychotic drugs he did young years has messed his mind up. I'm not a psychiatrist. I can't tell you how bad or what's the matter with him, but you can't believe nothing he says. Nothing.
Gotcha.
And his name, you can't even believe his name. His name is Thomas Delmer Pyle. He got the stage name Artemis. That's the first stage of his fakeness. is his name, if you know anything about him.
Let me take a quick break here, because I want to talk to you a little bit more, Gene, about what happened after the plane is on the ground, now that it's on the ground.
Yeah.
Well, let's leave his name out of it, if we can.
You got it.
I don't like talking about child molesting someone.
I won't bring his name up again. Chaz and AJ in the morning, 99.1 PLR, 95.9 The Fox. We have Gene Odom on the phone right now. He was best friends with Ronnie Van Zant, and on the plane the night the Lynyrd Skynyrd plane crashed. So, Gene, we want to have you back next week to talk about your long friendship and relationship with Ronnie and what that was like as Lynyrd Skynyrd took off and became the greatest Southern rock band to ever
being their bodyguard.
Play. Right.
Some great stories.
But here we are with the plane crash now. The plane is on the ground. It's in pieces. You crawl out from underneath the plane. What happened after that?
Well, I don't really know. I mean, I know the story what Billy told me and other people and the responders and stuff like that, but I had such a massive head injury that I was, in Mississippi, thought I was brain dead anyway. So what happened from the responders is that, and I'm going to tell you something that you don't know, that your fans don't know, and everything I tell you is 100% the facts. I'm not going to mention the other two guys' names because I wouldn't do that to them. But they went through that crack in the fuselage, and they went. Artemis and the other two guys went toward a light through the woods to come up there to Johnny Moat's place.
That's the farm.
That's the farm. Yeah. We were actually trying to get to the field that belonged to Mr. Smith. And he was one of the ones that was already there. But when they went through the woods, the responders, Dwayne Easley, Mr. Smith, and Jamie Wall, and other people were already, Bobby McDaniel, they were already on the way to the crash site because they heard from, they were in government, county government. They had heard that the plane had crashed in the vicinity. They were trying to find it. So as Artemis was coming through the woods and the other people there, and oh, by the way, two or three days before that, a couple of guys had escaped from a chain gang, a road gang. And so when Artemis and those other two guys come through the woods hollering, Brenda Martin, Johnny Moat's wife, shot up in the air with a 243 rifle because they were coming toward their house and they were hollering. So they knew they'd heard a big racket out there, so they figured that they were telling the truth, and they set them down on the porch. And Artemis finds his way back around the way that the responders were coming in and went around there after the rescue was already well underway and they'd already removed bodies and us from the plane. Artemis shows up, and they set him on a log beside Gary. And he's filling with his little scratch on his side. He says his ribs were stuck out. What he did, if you listen to the FAA report, they report Artemis Powell walked away from the crash. The FAA don't report not one injury. What he did, eyewitness, when he crawled out of the fuselage, not having an injury, he scraped his rib cage on the fuselage and made himself an injury so he would have an injury. That's how he got his rib cage scraped, is because he did it on purpose so he would have an injury. That's coming from one of the eyewitnesses that stepped out of the plane before he did. And I'm not going to mention that guy's name. Again, don't believe nothing Artemis of Delmer tells you. So
the Artemis said, I know you don't want me to bring up his name. But Artemis,
I understand. Go ahead.
Artemis
go
said ahead. That he was shot by the farmer.
He was not. And the farmer did an interview one day. Johnny Moat did an interview saying that I didn't shoot nobody. I thought at that time Johnny Moat shot up in the air with a shotgun. But after meeting with his wife, ex-wife, she said, no, Gene, I shot up in the air, and it was a .243 rifle. He tells people he gets shot because he wants I don't know the actual medical term for the lunatic, but sympathy – psychosis and what do you call it? Narcissism. He's the biggest narcissist you've ever bumped into. And he'll tell you one story, turn right around and walk 10 feet away and change that story to nothing but a different story. And then when he gets 10 feet away, he changes it to a different story. He's so full of crap. I can't say what I want to say on your line for your fans and your viewers. But he's a damn lunatic, son. And I, with an eighth grade education I got, I'm not smart enough to say tell you what kind of medical condition he's got. You have to be a seasoned psychiatrist to figure that lunatic out, along with the massive amounts of psychedelic drugs that he done early in life. He's just, his mind is warped.
Gene Odom, friend of Ronnie Van Zant and survivor of the plane crash that killed Ronnie, on the phone right now. We're linked up to all his stuff at WPLR.com and 95.9thefox.com. When was it? I'm sorry, go ahead.
Let me say this before I forget. People tell me that he runs around in front of the plane and is moving and rips part of the fuselage open to get into the people. The only way that those responders could get into where those bodies and where the severe injury were was to take I've held it in my own hands, a hatchet, and they took and cut a hole in the top above the injured. And Dwayne Easley and those guys went to sit on top of that hole, and one got down in the hole and they would pull those injured people out. And what made me come to the 100% conclusion, I know that Ronnie Van Zant cut his seatbelt, is the last time I was out there, a local guy, they say, come on, Gene, we're going to take you to a bunch of the airplane crash souvenir stuff. I went, well, what the hell? I thought, you know, he said, come on. We went to this guy's garage. He has a tremendous amount of the
wreckage.
Cockpit, the wreckage, the cockpit stuff, some seat cushions, some seat, because they had to cut everybody's seatbelt in the front to get them loose, and then the four seatbelts on the couch were red, and the standard seatbelts in the plane were gray, and so they had the three cut seatbelts, and they had this one full-length seatbelt buckled together that wasn't cut with a knife. And I went, now it's a true story. I know that Ronnie Van Zant unsnapped the seatbelt because y'all didn't cut it to get him out. He said, no, Gene. He said, as far as my memory goes, Ronnie was the only one that we didn't have to cut the seatbelt out because he was stretched out underneath everybody piled up there, you know, and that told me right there that I knew that I knew he had unsnapped a seatbelt. If he hadn't unsnapped a seatbelt, he probably would have survived.
We have to let you go. Oh, so horrible. I mean, it was horrible for the whole world, but specifically for you. You lost your best friend. We want to talk to you next week about, you know, the good times with Leonard Skinner.
Exactly, yeah.
But before I let you go, Gene, at what point did you learn that Ronnie died? Were you in the hospital, or how did you find out?
No. They didn't tell me in the hospital. Oh, I got out a month later. My girlfriend was taking me. I said, let's go. I got to go see Ronnie. Go check on him. And so we started driving, and she pulled into the cemetery. What the hell are you doing? I said, well, you know, then she pulled up to these temporary mausoleums where where he was, with no name, it was just blank. And I said, what are you doing that? She said, this is where Ronnie said he didn't make it. And as of this day, it still breaks my heart. And, oh, man.
Man, I'm sorry for your loss. That's a very tough way. You didn't even get a chance to.
It was a month. It was a month later.
Yeah. Gene, thank you for coming on and sharing such a personal story. And we'd love to get you back on next week to talk about the good times with Ronnie and the band.
Yeah, certainly, man. Call me.
Thank you. Gene Odom, friend of Ronnie Van Zant. We're linked up to all his stuff at the radio station's website. Thank you, brother.
Hey, look here, tell all your fans that he would be mighty proud and honored to know that all these years after his death, people still love his music. Tell your fans thanks.
It's like it just came out.
Absolutely.
It's just as fresh and just as important.
And relevant.
Thank you, brother.
Yes, sir. Thank y'all.
Yeah, I got chills.